It's a dance between making it happen and allowing it to happen.
When you're in these loving, flowing, appreciative, grateful, joyful states, any of them for any period of time, your heart moves into this super efficient rhythmic pattern. We can become coherent, and we feel this at times of elevated emotion, deep meditation, love. The moment I saw my daughter as she popped out of her mom the day of her birth, and then when they handed her to me, no words to describe, my heart was exploding. I wanted to radiate the feeling from me that I was hoping they would get. I believe that love is the creative force of the universe. I believe that we are all made of love, and that's what God is. You don't know how to figure out all this other stuff, that's okay. But do what you do know how to do, and you know how to love.
Hello, and welcome to the Live Your Love radio show and podcast. I'm Dr. Alicia Doss, spiritual seminar leader, author, and speaker. My upcoming book with Hay House, Your Angelic Ancestry, is on pre-sale now. I have such a treat for you today, my beloveds. I have Bruce Cryer, who is one of the founders of HeartMath. Bruce, delighted to have you.
Nice to be here, Alicia. I'm looking forward to this.
I'm very much looking forward to it. So I'm going to tell y'all a little bit about Bruce, and then we're going to have such an amazing, inspiring, wide range of a conversation going from Broadway to creativity to businesses to always to the heart. So Bruce's career began as an actor, singer, dancer in the world's longest running musical, The Fantastics. A longtime meditator, yoga, and Tai Chi practitioner, he followed his passion for the integration of spirituality, optimal health, human performance, and eventually heart-brain coherence. He became a founding director of the HeartMath Institute in 1991 and later CEO. He's taught courses on HeartMath and creativity for more than 25 years at Stanford University. His clients include NASA, Mayo Clinic, Unilever, the NHS, Cathay Pacific Airways, Shell, Johnson & Johnson, and Yosemite National Park. He was named a top 50 thought leader in personal excellence. His album of original autobiographical songs, and by the way, y'all, I have listened to your voice, Bruce. You have the voice of an angel. Oh my goodness,
you
hear this man sing. His song, so his album is called Renaissance Human, and it was released in 2018. Through all of this work in the world, his dedication to the path of the heart has never wavered. So again, so delighted to have you. We will start, as we always start, Live Your Love, by calling in the light, by invoking spirit, and then we'll have a beautiful conversation. So my beloved listeners and viewers, unless you're driving, please gently close your eyes. And if you're driving, just open your heart ever wider. And just take in a deep breath and breathe in all the love of the universe, which is so infinite. And as you exhale, just let go of anything less than love. Just let it all go. And we are so open to miracles today as we just breathe in all the light of spirit, all the love of the truth of who we are, breathing that in through every cell, creating radiant health and well-being. And breathe out, perhaps with some sound, any stress, negativity, karma, anything that is less than love and light. Just breathe in love and breathe out anything less. As we continue to call on the light, keep breathing in love and breathing out less. As we open into the light of the Holy Spirit, the light of the Christ, the light of love, asking that anything that's less than love and light be taken and transmuted. And we just place this beautiful conversation, every listener and viewer and all those to watch the archives, into God's grace, love, and light for the highest good. May we be aware that right now we join heart to heart with each one present, and that amalgamation of us creates the heart of God right here amongst us, as us, one in love, we are. And so be it. Blessed be and amen. Okay. So, Bruce, and I'm sorry, please, I love it when you're continuing to meditate. me a little bit about, a little bit more about HeartMath. I mean, I think that we all know that we talk a lot about, it talks a lot about coherence, but what exactly does that mean? Can you break it down for people who aren't that familiar with it?
Why don't we start off with a very small question? That's great. meaning I can, I have talked for days on that exact question. Days. We have 5 minutes.
Bruce, I have high expectations and you're going to exceed them, man.
Whoa. Okay. Well, here we go. So what was the question? Just kidding. Yeah. So HeartMath is a beautiful thing. And as you mentioned in the bio, I was there at the beginning and have been associated for now 35 years. And part of what I loved about it, as we began to do research into understanding more about how the heart and brain are always talking to each other, how that communication is vital to everything else going on in our body, immune function, energy, sleep, you name it. And as we got to put the science to it all, we start to realize that there are these states that people get into that had nothing to do with meditation necessarily. It could be flow, where you're just in a project and you feel like, oh my God, that was effortless. How long? 3 hours? There's no way. The time just flew by. Or you're in a conversation with someone and you just feel completely in sync. Or I'll never forget one time I was running barefoot on a beach in Maine. And I felt, and I'm an athlete to some extent, not a great athlete, but dancer. And you know, so I love the feeling of flow. And there was this one time I realized I feel more in flow running than I've ever felt in my life. And I'd run for thousands of miles on roads. And so this feeling of flow, this feeling of life is in a zone right now. And wow, does this feel good? And time is a non-factor. Well, we began to look at it because we also felt, the founder, Doc Childre, felt that the heart was being given some sort of short shrift in modern Western society. We had dumbed it down. The heart's a pump, but don't bring it to work. That literally was like a thing, like, don't bring it to work. Okay, I'm a father, I have a daughter. You're asking me not to bring my daughter to work with me, not to bring how I care about people, about humanity, not to work with me. How would that make me better? How would that possibly improve my functioning? So we felt there was something really out of sync, and heart disease was the number one killer in the world, in the US especially. So, okay, there's something wrong, but it makes sense if we're dissing the heart all the time and we're dying of heart problems all the time, there is a connection, but there was not really a proven connection yet. So we began to study it and discovered that when we have these moments of time is elastic, where you just feel so in sync with some other person or in sync with nature, that's a measurable state that actually happens in the heart. That whenever we are in this beautiful feeling of peace or compassion or love or joy, which we've all experienced, not as much as we would like, but of course your show is a testament to the joy of doing this. Whenever we're in those moments, we began to actually measure the patterns that happen in the heart. Because if we were studying the heart in the early 1990s, it was obvious, well, number one, the heart's the dominant rhythm generator in the body. Name another organ that pulses. Right. It's the dominant electrical system in the body, by far 60 times stronger than the brain. It's a magnetic system, like 60 times the signal produced by the heart is 60 times stronger in amplitude than that which is produced in the brain. So it's the power, it's the electrical generator in the body as well. So all these things about the heart. And oh yeah, I've done this little casual experiment all over the world, 4 continents, probably tens of thousands of people at this point. And I'll ask people to close their eyes. They're usually in a hall or a theater or a conference room or something. I'll say, everybody just point north. And no one has any idea where north is.
Now, Bruce, this is an experiential show. Do it with us now. We're all going to do it with you.
So great. Well, without any outside references, just everybody right now point north. And you can't cheat and just point to the ceiling. You have to actually try to figure out where's north again. We don't have the benefit of seeing each other, but like Alicia's struggling, trying to figure it out. Yeah. Well, I would not have pointed there, Alicia. I would have pointed over here. But my point being, I'll do that with a room full of 1,000. I'll do that in a room full of 1,000 people and all hands are going in different directions. It looks like, you know, it's crazy because who knows? You don't really know. Yeah. And I'll say, okay, everybody, close your eyes now. And now I'd like you to point to yourself. 99 point whatever percent of all people in of all cultures that where I've done this point exactly where you did, to the heart.
To their heart. Oh, wow.
And the random 0.4% that don't, it's somewhere up here in the north,
in
the head. So my point in sharing that story is that we perceive the heart as central to who we are.
Yeah.
People who've had heart surgery have a sense of violation, unlike other types of surgery, a sense of often depression that comes with that as well sometimes. So, and yet all the spiritual traditions of the world revered the heart as a source of wisdom, of courage, of the portal to the divine, the soul, so many things. And yet in the West, in the last couple hundred years, nope, it's just a fantastic pump. Okay, yes, it is, but that's just so not the case. There's so much more. So we wanted to prove that. So we discovered that when you're in these loving, flowing, appreciative, grateful, joyful states, any of them for any period of time, your heart moves into this super efficient rhythmic pattern. Instead of beating kind of chaotically like it does when we're stressed out, it looks kind of like an earthquake when you look at a monitor. When you're in these loving states, the pattern looks like a beautiful sine wave. The sine wave is also the shape of a laser light, which is called coherent light. So a laser has this beautiful, perfect pattern. Regular light, like in my room here, the waves are all over the place. They're chaotic. So we realize the human is the same. We can become coherent. And we feel this at times of elevated emotion, deep meditation, love. The moment I saw my daughter as she popped out of her mom the day of her birth, and then when they handed her to me, no words to describe, my heart was exploding. So we were trying to put all that together and said, so coherence is what is a scientific term to describe what's kind of going on in the body when we're in these states of flow or joy or connection to the divine or to spirit or whatever that is. And it's measurable. And so we took out of just the spiritual domain or religious domain and brought it down and said, hey guys, this is measurable and repeatable. And we can train you how to get in this more of the time. Meditation helps, breathing helps, love helps, prayer helps, but we can show you how to do that.
Beautiful. That is so beautifully shared. Can you take us through, are there heart math exercises? Is there a quick heart math coherence experience you can give us?
Yes, I would, but I would have to kill you. So it's a secret. It's a very, very high level top secret. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. In fact, the one that I will share is sort of the public tool in a way, HeartMath. We created something 20 years ago at least called Quick Coherence. And the idea is it's a quick way to get into a coherent state. Let me describe it first and then we'll do it. We can do it for a couple minutes. So there's three steps. The whole technique involves keeping your attention. First of all, bringing your attention to the area of the heart. Now you're not thinking of the organ. It's more like, I think this audience would all get, it's more like the heart chakra is what you're focused on, but it's just in that area. You're not trying to feel the chakra or the heart, but just bring your attention to that area. So that's the first step, just focus here. The second step is to breathe in a steady rhythm, about 5 seconds in, about 5 seconds out. And there's a reason for that rhythm. I'll tell you, I'll share that later. So you're breathing about 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out. And then the third step will be, and I'll guide it all, is to then bring in the feeling of appreciation for anything in your life, for the lovely set that I'm looking at behind you, Alicia, for the three cats asleep. They better stay asleep in the outside the door for the beautiful day that it was.
Still visiting the cats, or are those your cats?
These are visitor cats.
Okay.
Actually, I'm the visitor. It's their home.
Got it. Okay.
I'm the visitor human. So, but you can be appreciating anything, and I'll guide that as well. So, step one is just focus around the heart. Step two is breathe through the, imagine you could breathe through the heart, the air literally coming in there and leaving there. And then the third step is just to allow yourself to feel appreciation for people, for gardens, for sunrise, for something you're excited about doing next week, anything at all. Freedom of choice. Okay, so I invite everyone to close their eyes. And just gently bring your focus to the area of your heart. If you'd like to put your hand there, you can, but it's not necessary. And now just imagine you're drawing the air in through the heart for about 5 seconds. And now exhale out through the heart also for about 5 seconds. And breathe in again for about five through the heart. And breathe out through the heart for five. Just keep that gentle, steady rhythm going, counting on your own. And it's not a rigid count. You could be five and a half and five and a half, and that would be just fine. Keep that steady rhythm, keeping the focus in the area of the heart. Enjoy this feeling of the breath steady and the steadying feeling that you're probably gaining in the area of your chest, in your heart. And perhaps that steadying, more peaceful feeling is spreading a bit just from the breath, just from focusing. So keep the focus around the heart, keep the breath around five and five. And if you notice any tension or pain in any part of your body, allow the exhale to kind of release, like a relief breath, or release any tension out of that part of your body. Now continue with these steps, heart focus, heart breathing. Now I invite you to do heart feeling, meaning focus on things you appreciate in your life, best friends, wonderful partner, family members, pets, your garden, the vacation spot you can't wait to go to, some activity or hobby or something that you just love. It'd be like, wow, every time I do that, I feel so much myself. And focus on anything, skiing, swimming, hiking. Anything at all that you love and appreciate, and just revel in that feeling of appreciation as the breath continues to draw in appreciation with the breath, circulating it around through your body, through all your cells, and just keep this steady breathing going with the focus on appreciation. And as you're doing this, if you're noticing anything coming up that's left over from your day or your week, or some anxiety about something upcoming tomorrow or the next day or the weekend or any time, allow that feeling of tension to release the next time you exhale. Like a sigh of relief, just like, just letting go of that feeling and letting the exhale carry it out. So you keep breathing in appreciation, but if there is anything in there that's come up, a little anxiety or fear, anything, just allow it to release as you exhale. Okay, and so we don't all fly off Mother Earth. Let's gradually return to here. Take a couple of breaths to ground your energy in your body. Be grateful for these last few minutes of appreciating and breathing. And unbeknownst to us, our heart and our brain were becoming far more coherent, aligned, balanced, optimized. Okay, and you can go ahead and flutter your eyelids open like butterflies' wings.
Sweet way to say that.
If there's not a butterfly in your room, there should be. I think you should have some turquoise butterflies flitting in the background.
I think I should. I think I should. I think that would be apropos. That was gorgeous. That was so beautiful, beautifully done, and really gives us a sense. I mean, it's you'd almost have to be on an island not to have heard, especially if you're, you know, listening to Live Your Love, to not have heard of heart math. But I don't know that we've all experienced it. And you know what's interesting is I do similar meditations having never heard, you know, that that was part of heart math, but just intuitively breathing in the heart. And that's beautiful. I love it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely. Well, I just briefly, I want to ask, you know, you were a revolutionary taking this into corporations. And to me, and I've done a little bit with bringing spirituality into corporations. And to me, that's how our world shifts. You know, obviously it's all important, but what, tell us a little bit about what that was like for you, what it's like for you now. Are you met heart to heart there? Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, part of what drew me initially to the vision of HeartMath was that the founder was insistent that we use mainstream scientific research. I emphasize the word mainstream, not because we were owned by the drug companies, but because we thought we have some new concepts that are actually old concepts, but we're dressing them up in language for the 21st century. Well, then it was still the 20th century, not from thousands of years ago. And so to get the attention of leaders of any market, of any industry, you need data. And data is based not on science, and science is based on human physiology and what makes people tick. And in the context of what businesses care about, you know, they care about the performance of their people. They don't necessarily care about their stress. They don't mind piling it on, right? We know that is also true. But if, yes, when presented with the data, well, this is what you're doing to your people. And if you would adopt some sensible techniques that are not to bliss them out and not make them effective and clear and coherent, but are designed the opposite to make them more creative and more cognitively alive and better collaborators, wouldn't that make sense? And let's measure the outcomes. So part of my attraction was that we were going to use some really hardcore science, let alone data science everywhere we could, to measure not only in the lab the impact of what we were doing on the human heart and on respiration, on brain function, but also in the workplace itself, to say your employee satisfaction just went way up in that group went through that program. Their intention to quit just went way down because they're feeling like, my employer gave me tools to help me help myself. Okay, maybe I will stay. Yeah. Literally, that's what we would hear over and over again. So it was fun because we were such like data geeks with a heart, literally, because we would try to measure everything we could, but it was all for the purpose of showing a company, we will prove to you that this can make a difference. We're not afraid of proving it. But then you're gonna have to go with this. Like there's a deal here. We will help prove it. And then once we prove it, then we need your support, so that, because this is nothing without the leadership, you know, recommending this. So I loved that process. Now, I laugh, however, because in the early, like 92 and 93, when we were just starting to work with companies, we before that, we were already working with some religious organizations. They were a piece of cake. They didn't care about the science, like Unity Churches and Church of Religious Science. I'm sure many of your audience or New Thought churches. They were piece of cake. Very few of them cared about the science. It was fun, maybe, but they didn't need that. They're just like, help me love more.
Going on faith.
I'm there. Yeah. I'm there. Yeah. But when in the schools, we had a ton of very cynical teachers who needed the science. And we didn't have much at the beginning. We had theories, not hard data yet. And yet somehow, because we were practicing to try to stay in a more coherent state through a day, through a week, through a year. And I'd go in to meet with a corporate executive and I'd think, this is a joke compared to what the other vendors are bringing you. I have nothing other than a belief, a theory that I think is pretty solid, and me. I mean, basically, either you're going to buy into me, you're going to think I'm onto something because of this organization doing good work, and that my team are like, you guys are different. And we would get that a lot. And there were enough companies that said, you guys are onto something, because how you handle yourselves in business is different. You're not just running around, racing around, but you're also not just spaced out either. You're not like what we're afraid of. You're not just like needing to meditate all day long. So it was quite a process. I mean, I'm making it sound like we kind of nailed it from day one. Not at all. But there were all kinds of situations that didn't go well, and where we kind of got laughed out of the room a bit, right? But little by little, people realized these techniques make sense. That thing that I just showed, that we just demonstrated, the quick coherence, like, why wouldn't you want to do that? Like, what's the downside?
Right.
3 minutes of your time? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't ever waste 3 minutes of your time on anything. I'm so sorry to be giving you something to help you, your blood pressure, that it might take you, a minute or two. So it was fairly easy for people to kind of buy in once they realized there was a strong science background to this. And as we started getting, there's so many stories of how all this unfolded, but when we started getting published in major medical journals, such as the American Journal of Cardiology, such as the Journal of Stress Medicine, such as the Journal of Preventive Cardiology. These are major peer-reviewed journals that to even get in it, because they're peer-reviewed, is saying a lot. And then, and the article is strong. And then eventually Harvard Business Review and then Stanford, as you mentioned in the bio, got interested in the mid-90s. So there's one strong piece of support after another. So it was the evidence eventually that kind of made it so much easier, because all the skeptics would say, oh, my God, you guys are from California, aren't you? And I'd say, yep, guilty as charged. But we got science. Show me another HR program coming into your company that's got the data and the science and the pre and post outcomes with control groups. Show me another one like that. And they'd say, oh, wow, you guys have done your homework. I'd say, yes, we have. For the hippies in California, yes, we have. So I have a certain pride about it, as you can tell, because we were non-traditional trying to enter major companies, major health systems, as you name some of them. So it was an interesting job, but I also felt like I was kind of undercover in a way, because, I was having to language things in medical terms, in engineering terms. Engineers loved heart math. I'd have a room full of engineers at Shell Oil in London, and they just eat it up, because we had so much science to explain how the human system worked, the autonomic nervous system and the heart talking to the brain, 40,000 neurons. We had so much good, clean, logical, linear science that those types loved it. And those types often were the ones that actually ran the companies. So they realized this makes sense. And then in that process, I can't tell you how many times a major executive of a company would come up to me at a break and say, I don't know, this, I'm just awakening certain spiritual feelings. I don't want to talk to anybody about it. And I'd say, yeah, I wouldn't say this, but I was like, this is a Trojan horse. We're ultimately about the spiritual life. But how do we reach people, the masses? We've got to present it in a way they can understand. You have to meet people where they're at. But where they're also at is trying to understand these other promptings going on inside them, where they don't get any kudos for that in their corporate environment or necessarily even in the family. So it's been a very fun journey. And I find I still love talking about it. I still love helping people in any way I can from my own practice of all of this for 35 years.
No, that's really beautiful. And yes, I think people come, they think they're coming for one reason, and they're really coming for something much deeper and more pervasive than they realize. People just, especially in the corporate world, don't talk about it, but they are more and more. There's a lot of intensity and yes, darkness on the planet, but to me, there's also more light. People are opening up in a really beautiful way.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, I want to take a little bit of a left turn and talk about your beginnings as an amazing singer and dancer. And what was, tell us a little bit about your time with, with the Fantastics and being in the creative world. What were some of the highlights? What did you learn? Share about that.
Well, yes, delighted to. So a little backstory. So I was a kind of an all-American kid, played three sports, nothing. I was a very good student. I'm not trying to be shy. I was a very good student, but like top of my class throughout at a, upper middle class New Jersey suburb. So I was pretty sharp there, but also kind of unmemorable. There's not a specific thing that I was like, wow, he's really an awesome whatever. And but I was a musician at age 8. I started playing trumpet in the little elementary school band, and later had a trumpet teacher, and later was good enough. I was in New Jersey Junior Symphony, and but I was never going to do it seriously. But my senior year in high school, I decided to be in the chorus of the high school, and my teacher, the voice teacher, knew me from as a trumpet player, blah blah blah. I get told I'm going to play the lead in the high school musical. I did not audition. And he pulled me back the auditorium one day, and we'd been kind of rehearsing. Like we were, he was working with me. I was one of the new kids in the choir. He seemed to be working with other new kids. I was liking it. Okay, this is cool. I don't know where this is going, but this is fun. And then one day he says, "Well, we're going to do it. Everybody wants to know the big musical to be Carousel, the famous Broadway musical, and you're going to play the lead." And I was like, "What?" I don't recall auditioning for that. I don't even know what the show is. And so 9 months later, this was fall, and the show wasn't until May. 9 months later, or 8 months later, I performed in that show. A cousin of mine who was a big star on Broadway at the time came and saw me, and it was a thrill. I mean, basically, I was exploring a side of myself I never imagined I would do, nor had I any impulse to do. I never thought of myself as a singer. I was not a dancer. I was not theatrical in any way. If I had an opportunity to be on stage or not, or not one, like I wasn't the one that needed to be in front. Not at all. I was shy. 2 years after that high school musical, I'm playing the leading role in the longest running musical in the world, The Fantastics in New York City. Finding myself in that role, living in a penthouse apartment for free, also 5 minute walk to the theater. I was a sophomore at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music, where I was studying voice, dance, and theater. I had this rapid from that high school experience, realized there's something here. My cousin told me, "You have a gift, I will help you." So it was kind of like, I think you need to follow this dude. Start picking up some dance stuff. Do Luigi. He was the old, remember Luigi from your days in New York? He was the main jazz teacher for Broadway dancers. Anyhow, I was just picking up stuff, and found that I think I'm pretty good at dance. The athlete in me is kind of enjoying the dance. This is more fun kind of than baseball. And then the singing was developing because I was at a world-class music school, and things were getting better and better. And then I get this role for 2 months, 64 performances in the Fantastics. And I kept thinking to myself, how did I get here? I never aspired to any of this. And here I am. And oh, by the way, that show, The Fantastics, it was the first show I ever saw in New York City when I was 9 years old. Because my cousin, the one that was the famous actor, that was his big break for his career when I was nine and he was about 25 or something in New York. So 11 years later, I'm picked to be the boy in that same show that my cousin had been 11 years earlier. So there was so many surprises through the whole process. I was not a theater kid. Oh my God, I got to be on stage. I got to be on stage. Or wanting to sing. Like even as people were saying, you have a really good voice. I said, really? Really? I don't hear that it's all that great. Over time, I realized, okay, now, okay. I believe them now. But yeah, it just was such an unexpected journey in so many ways. And becoming a dancer, I discovered I love to dance at least as much as I love to sing. And in some ways, I like to dance more because it's easier. Put on a nice piece of music, I can dance anywhere in front of anybody, and that's all I need, you know. Whereas singing is a little more restrained in some ways for me. Not that one's better than the other. So it was the gift of a lifetime. And I left that career, as I think I mentioned to you. After about 5 years in New York, I decided I was being pulled to California, interestingly, not just because it was California, but because of that's where you went in the late 70s for your spiritual growth, to learn about health and wellness. And that was clear to me and my girlfriend at the time, who was also a great actress. That was clear to us both. It's time to exit this world of theater and entertainment and all that. It's fun. We're really good at it, but it's not got this satisfaction, the sense of fulfillment, as if we could learn more about ourselves and help others in other ways beyond entertaining them. Ironically, now I do both. So it all came back eventually. It all came back in a very big way after I had cancer and a bunch of things. And I found myself yearning to sing again. And even though I'd had double hip replacement after the cancer, I found myself challenged to try to dance again by a friend of mine who I will never thank enough for him challenging me to try five rhythms dance. We talked about your soul dance. So this was a similar method. And I could not believe when I got on the dance floor and could actually dance a little bit, even though I just had double hip replacement. And 13 years later, I can't dance enough. And I'm dancing at a level I never would have imagined I could dance at the level I'm dancing now, at the age I am now, compared to when I started. So life has had so many surprises, so many surprises.
That's beautiful. Yes, and we have a similar background. I was an actress in New York and then I did come to California to act. Well, really, I came to California to find spirit. That's when I immersed myself in spirituality and never looked back. And then, of course, you know, as I was sharing, had this whole spiritual experience on the Temple of Philae in Egypt, because I was intimidated. You know, I went to New York when I was 20, and that was, you know, old to start dancing, of course.
Yeah.
And I just started having these spiritual experiences while dancing. So I'd been a DJ, so I started Soul Dance, which is many people have done, thousands of people now. And it's really about just dancing. You know, if you can walk, you can dance. And it's really, and even if you can't walk, I have people in wheelchairs come to Soul Dance.
Absolutely. Dance. Yes, beautiful.
And yeah, it was just, and it's so healing. And you know, the thing about dance is you go in so many different directions. It's actually very healing for your body.
Totally.
Because you're not just like weights or running where it's very unilateral. It's slick.
Fluidity, flexibility, and it's regeneration. It's the movement of regeneration a lot, right? The flexibility and you're adapting to what you're feeling and what the music's doing to you.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I found it was a great spiritual exercise to be moving outwardly, but to be focused inwardly, and then to allow the movement to reflect the inner experience to be affected by the movement until it became one and the inner became the outer.
I totally know what you mean. Yes, beautiful.
Yeah. So now I know you had a lot of physical challenges, as you just intimated. How did heart math help you through that? That was a tremendous advantage. And how can people who are dealing with, you know, I'm in the Palisades. You're my first podcast back in the Palisades, different studio, but still back in the Palisades. You know, so talk to us about moving through challenge, which is inevitable and also strengthens us, but with flow and with the heart, and rather than with will and forcing ourselves through things. So that was another big question you could talk for days on.
I could. Yeah, but thank you for asking. Yeah, well, I think in my own journey of the heart, which began way before heart math, but heart math became the organized process to really dive deep on all the levels of the heart, or at least as many as we explored. And I already kind of intuitively knew, and I think this is why when I ask that question in large groups, point to yourself, they point to their heart. There's this inner knowing that the heart is central. And when you can really be in sync with your heart, things just kind of work better. They're just more balanced. And now I'm losing the thread of what your question was. So I could talk just about the heart, but say again your question.
How do you move through challenge?
Through challenge.
through challenge with the heart and with flow, rather than just willing yourself. We all, pride ourselves on being strong, but then how do we do it in a place? It's a dance between making it happen and allowing it to happen. How did you through your challenges, and how can we all do so through the heart rather than our head?
So many ways to answer that, but one of the most fundamental is that many, many times in my life, whether it was a physical issue like a cancer diagnosis, whether it was a physical issue, a staph infection in my blood, which is life-threatening diagnosis, whether it was you need to have both hips replaced diagnosis right after my mother had passed away, all the different things that were emotionally more challenging than the physical.
Course.
So the heart math helped me in so many ways because when I was first diagnosed, I already had almost 20 years of practice under my belt and therefore almost 20 years of teaching because I was one of the first facilitators of heart math. And I don't know who has the record of the most heart math workshops ever delivered, but it likely is me because it was about 4,000 when I left heart math, and that was 14 years ago. And I keep doing it, and I keep being interviewed on podcasts. Here we are. So one of the things I learned through my journey of the dark night of the soul and what my body was going through and my soul was going through was that there are many a time when I didn't know what was going to be the outcome of whatever it was, the surgery, the procedure, the test. And so where could I go for peace and balance and hope? It was to go to my heart. Now, I will share a thing that I often cite as one of the main reasons this was so helpful for me over the years. In the very earliest parts of heart math, the Casio watch that could beep on and keep time had just come out like that was a hot product. Wow, a watch that will beep on the hour. Whoa, this is serious technology. And I had one. And I thought to myself, if I every hour when it beeps, go to my heart and practice that quick coherence, it'll become more automatic. I already knew to get to be an actor in the longest running musical in the world, I had practiced a ton of singing, a ton of dancing, a ton of how to be adaptable and flexible. I practiced like crazy. I wasn't just naturally so good that they would have picked me. I had a fantastic background to practice. So I knew that about anything. I thought if I'm going to get good, not that I'm competing, but I just want to really understand what this dimension of the heart is, I need to practice when it's not easy to practice. So by forcing myself to do it when the beep goes off, practice now. You're in the middle of a meeting, so what? Practice anyway. You're driving, so what? Practice anyway. So I was kind of diligent with myself, practice anyway, because I realized there will be times I will need to use this when I'm under high stress. If I have not practiced, it won't be natural. I won't be able to do it. If you never practice riding a bike, but only did it once every 5 years, well, good luck. So that was a big insight for me. So as a result of having practiced so much and kind of naturally in the face of any concern in life, I would kind of naturally bring my attention to my heart because I had practiced doing that so many times. So that became like the default, like, oh, bad news. Okay. Bring my energy to the heart. Let's see what my intuition starts to tell me about this. Stay neutral. Let's not overreact right now. Yes, if this is true, what we're hearing, this could be a problem, but let's not waste energy until we know. Let's stay here and let's stay centered. So this was the heart math teaching. Part of when this showed up relative to my health journey as very valuable was the number of times either a friend or a doctor or a nurse would comment on, are you sure you had surgery? You act like you just got back from Maui, or you're looking so much better than I was expecting. I got that comment a few times. And I would say, well, how bad did you think I was going to look? Because I'm not exactly feeling chipper right now. I mean, it was bladder surgery, just to be vulnerable. So what I discovered was that I had developed this kind of inner strength to keep coming back to my heart no matter what was going on, and to try to put love to someone or someone else, not just about me, not just constantly making it about me. And so I would get these comments about how resilient you are. And one time when right after my first hip replacement, And it's my first appointment to go see the orthopedic guy who'd done the surgery. And I'm still feeling, you know, a little dicey. I mean, you have a whole hip replaced. It's major surgery. You are learning to walk again. I mean, muscles are having to adjust to titanium inside there. And it's a lot of hardware and it's wild. And I'm at the doctor's office and they put you in these ridiculously huge paper shorts. Like, okay, number one, if my waist was 60, these would fit fine. and they're paper, like, dude. And anyway, that's what it was. So I had to walk down the end of a hallway. As I get near the end of the hallway, my doctor's watching me. I hear him laughing. That's not a good, comfortable feeling when I'm like, it's not like I'm on sort of on the runway, like, and he's watching me. And I hear laughter, like, oh no, what's going on? And I walk back. He said, I'm like, what's so funny? He said, his physician assistant and him, we wish all of our patients, you look amazing. You're doing so well. I said, really? I have no sense of how I'm doing. You know, I have nothing to compare it to. So I don't know. But there again was another example. Wow, your recovery is so impressive. So that is absolutely attributable to all the work of the practice I did, but also all the times I spent guiding others. Every time I would guide anyone, it was practice for me. It wasn't just something I was doing by rote. Oh, here's the steps. I was absolutely practicing it because I wanted to radiate the feeling from me that I was hoping they would get. I wasn't telling them I was doing that, but why would you do that? If you're just going to be mental saying the steps, they'll feel that. If you're actually in your heart loving them as you're saying the steps, they'll probably feel that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They will. Beautiful. I can't believe we're almost at the end here. This has been just lovely. Crazy. Awesome. So my last question before we move into a brief meditation and then find out a little bit more about things you have to share. My last question is what would you share with people about your spiritual journey and what has been most, or at least one of the things that has been really, truly evocative, transformational, wondrous to you about God, about spirit, about love?
Another yes or no answer.
Exactly. Yeah.
I totally agree with what you just said. Wow. I believe that love is the creative force of the universe. I believe that we are all made of love, and that's what God is. And there was a phrase I heard early on 30 some years ago, love is never wasted. And that's become a mantra for me, especially when I'm having a conflict with someone or something's not going the way I hoped it would go. The expectation was not met, and to love anyway. And there have been many times in my life where I just, like, there were dark times. The health stuff was one period, but I've had other things that have gone on too that were also very challenging. And I'd be at a point of despair sometimes. I'm highly emotionally sensitive, hence dancer, singer, actor, and poet, writer, photographer. And so, but I would quiet myself down and a little voice would say, you don't know what to do, but you know how to love. You know how to love. Just love. You know how to do that. You don't know how to figure out all this other stuff. That's okay. But do what you do know how to do, and you know how to love. You've proven to that to yourself. You know what love feels like. And that's what the universe is made of. That's what God is, in my experience. And so to be able to experience that as the presence of God in a day, in a meeting, in a phone call, while driving, is an incredible gift. I'm not saying I do it all the time, by the way, but whenever that happens, and it often comes through music, often it's through music, and often it's through music and dance. This Sunday I'll dance with 20 of my closest dance buddies, and there'll be moments I'll probably be sobbing in the middle of the dance. Something will be so beautiful to me, and I'll just be like, I can't believe I'm getting to dance again.
I think dance is happy it gets to be you again.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Thank you, Alicia.
Yes. Shall we move into a meditation?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So, my beloveds, just truly, let's just set the intention to open your hearts, your heart chakras, your hearts ever more than you have, even more than you have, wider, higher, deeper. And just take a moment and just receive love into your heart on the in-breath. Breathe in love into your heart chakra, and as you exhale, just exhale anything less than love. Breathe light into your heart. Just let go of anything less. Just let it all go. Let it be transmuted. Just offer it up like lilies floating on a pond, just floating away from you, any worries, concerns, troubles. Because at this moment, there is nothing more important than love. And in fact, the same is true for the next moment and the next. So breathe in love, and this time as you breathe in love and you exhale, that love just amplifies all through your beingness. And that love is so great through you, it touches to the hearts of those listening with you. And now that creates a daisy chain of love, linking your heart to the hearts of all your beloveds walking this planet with you, especially when they don't feel like your beloveds, because love is never wasted, as Bruce said. So opening your heart evermore, containing the entire world. As Whitman said, you are large, you contain universes. So allow your heart to expand well beyond you, well beyond the room you're in, to fill the entire world. And in fact, stretch your arms out and arch back, opening your heart even more. Ah, more love, more light, more truth. This is who you are. When someone asks you to point to yourself, perhaps you point at your heart and know that contains all hearts. You reside within the heart of God. And just place both your hands on your heart. Just be aware of the gentle rising and falling of your chest as God breathes you. Perhaps God breathes love into your heart with each breath and breathes love out with each breath. And now we're just becoming aware of that, of what's always been going on. In this next breath, you just receive the breath. And then you give the breath back. Receiving love, giving love back. Never ending cycle of ever expanding infinite love. This is who you are. Amen. Tell us what's present with you now, and then how we can find you.
Calming joy were the words that came up when you asked the question. I make it really hard for people to find me. It's my name on every social media: LinkedIn, Bruce Cryer; Instagram, Bruce_Cryer. YouTube is different. It's actually Renaissance Human. I have a website, brucecryer.com. By the time this show airs, I may have a photo art store online, and that'll be called brucecryer.art. So it's a gallery of photos. I'm an iPhonographer, not a super snazzy guy, but people have loved the photos I've taken, especially of nature and beautiful nature all over the world. And so that's happening. So my name, Bruce Cryer.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something called vibrato. What is that?
So the short version is vibrato literally means the wave that is added to a voice. Ah, or when a violinist is going like that to a string, that creates a wave to the tone. A tone of a voice or a string or any instrument is flat. It's just a single frequency. But vibrato is the creation of a little wave that makes it sound richer. So when I first had vibrato in my own singing voice at age 18, it was like, oh my God, I have vibrato. Thank God. Because it was a big deal as a singer. If you can take yourself seriously as a singer, that was the thing, to be on Broadway, to be in opera, all that kind of stuff. 30, 40 years later, I'm talking to a friend with a great business idea called Vibrato. I said, oh, I love the name, spelled differently, and it had cool logos. It was 10 years ago. And I bought it from her. And I said, I know I need to have this. I don't know why, but I need to have this. And I bought the name and the logos. 10 years after that, I was standing on a beach in outside Orlando, Florida. A Category 5 hurricane was coming. I had kidney stones and a UTI. I was in agony. And there was a Category 5 hurricane coming. I didn't know which was worse. So I could laugh at that. What's that?
I said, you are a little dramatic, aren't you?
Totally. A flair for the dramatic. Totally. My whole life has been this way. At least I can laugh about it. So on the beach, as I was feeling despair for myself, as I was feeling despair for the 5 million people who had evacuated from that hurricane, as I was feeling despair because this was also 3 weeks before the U.S. election, and I thought I had my preference, but no matter who won, half the country would be in shock and horror and anger and upset, you name it. So I was feeling all these waves going on, literal waves in the ocean, waves in my body, waves of pain coursing through me, waves of despair, waves of, oh my God, how are they going to manage this? All of that. And I thought, wait a minute, dude. And I asked the ocean for advice. And the ocean said, generate waves. Don't just feel waves. Generate waves. And I thought, started thinking, I have been studying waves my whole life. I'm a dancer. I do something called five rhythms, which has waves. I've been studying the waves of the heart for 35 years. I am like wave guy, wave master. And I thought, I need to share something about this. And I'm walking along the beach and the voice said, this is vibrato. This is why you bought that name 10 years ago. You will call this vibrato. I mean, I didn't assume this was God. It was kind of like my alter marketing advisor. but it was a very powerful moment. I'm not trying to make it just sound funny, but it was a powerful moment of you never really knew what it was because you didn't need to yet, but this is it. And so that idea of adding a wave to make something more beautiful is what I'm trying to do with vibrato. So it's a course. It's a course of techniques derivative from heart math, but it's me having taken it a whole nother level to playing with the waves of nature, waves of the sea to release stuff that's otherwise accumulating in us more easily. And so it's a whole kind of methodology. I just did a 7-week course on the Shift Network with it, and which was a delight to do. So it's kind of a whole philosophy of how do we not only release things more rapidly that's building up, especially in these times when there's so much chaos, so much uncertainty. The chaos is one thing, but I think the complete lack of certainty about anything is like so hard for most people, myself included. So how do you deal with that without it just causing more stress, more frustration, more fear, more anger, whatever it is? And we pay a price in bad sleep, in chronic illness, all kinds of things. So I'm on a mission to like, we got to get rid of stuff every day, guys. We got to offload. We weren't designed to carry this stuff around, not and live at our desks. If we're out in nature and could burn it off all the time, that's one thing, but we're not. So how you can burn it off in front of digital devices 18 hours a day. So we've got to intervene for ourselves, for our own. So part of it is that, part of it is learning how to, the power of gratitude and appreciation at another level. Part of it is radiating love to our future, to our future self. So it's very much heart focused. Duh. You know, who would have guessed it? I'd still be talking about the heart. But yeah, I am.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. Well, it has just been absolutely delightful to have you. Any closing thoughts?
It was delightful talking with you, Alicia. How fun how we met. How fun that we're doing this now. Your first show in your new studio, and I appreciate. And I'm still kind of feeling that expansiveness of when you asked us to do that in that meditation. Of we all need to do that more. I love that.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. I'm so glad. It's been absolutely wonderful having you. Everybody, Bruce Cryer, brucecryer.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining Bruce Cryer and myself, Alicia Doss, on Live Your Love. Next month, we have Marianne Williamson, New York Times number one, multiple best-selling author with a new book, Mystic Jesus, and a new course coming to LA. So Marianne Williamson is coming back to Live Your Love. So tune in next month, third Tuesday of the month on radio, podcast, and YouTube. Until we meet again, live your love. I wanted to invite you to join my launch team by buying my book, which is on pre-sale now, Your Angelic Ancestry, Discover Your Archangelic Name, Heritage, and Higher Purpose. Go to aliciadoss.com/book and buy the book. And with doing that, you will get to join my launch team. We'll go live. I'll go live with you each month, answer questions, help you connect to your own angelic nature, to the archangel. It's going to be a really beautiful, intimate time. Also, you get a course with it called Rise with 9 modules, which gives you a really very tangible connection to a specific archangel that you have heritage with that you can then work with for these next several months. And lastly, you get the first 3 chapters of the book before anybody else does. So this is available for a limited time. So please go to aliciadoss.com/book and grab my book and join me on my launch team. So just to tell you a little bit about it, it's ancestry.com for the angelic realm. So it helps you to connect to your own divine nature, your own angelic part of you, that part that never forgets God, so that you can access higher guidance and really manifest your heavenly gifts and purpose so that you can experience more heaven on earth.